This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Oil prices are much higher than they were, so hovering around $100 a barrel is significantly more than it was last year. And Angola finally is out of recession.
That's Alex Vines, head of the Africa program at Chatham House, talking about Angola's economy and its role in tomorrow's election. Details coming up also. In Sudan, death toll from flash floods has climbed to 83. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. UNITA, a rebel movement turned political party, is one of seven opposition parties standing in Wednesday's elections. It is the main rival to the People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA, which has ruled the oil-rich country since independence from Portugal in 1975. For a better understanding of tomorrow's vote in Angola, I talked to Alex Vines, who has led the Africa program at Chatham House since 2002 and its managing director for risk, ethics and resilience. He's also an assistant professor at Coventry University and sits on the editorial and advisory boards for the South African Journal for International Affairs, Africa Review, and the Journal of South African Studies.
So this is the fifth election since multi-partyism was introduced into Angola. So the first one was in 1992. And it looks as if this will be the closest election since 92. The opposition party, UNITA, which used to be the rebel group in the civil war that ended in Angola 20 years ago, is running a strong campaign. It has a charismatic leader, Alberto Costa Jr. And he's basically UNITA. Its leader are giving a run for the money of the party of government, the MPLA, which has been in power in Angola since 1975.
What could Adalberto Costa Jr. Offer the people that João Lourenço can't?
He's drawing the crowds. The Angola has a very young population, and there is very high youth unemployment and underemployment, and people want change. Young people in Angola don't know of any other party ruling them than the MPLA. And so there is this real desire for change. That's kind of the offer on the table. João Lourenço offers continuity and Adalberto da Costa Jr. offers change. The trouble is that once you dig deeper into this, in what are the economic policies, you know, how can they manage kind of hyperinflation, geopolitics, these sorts of things, and it gets much less clear or thinking about those sorts of things. But as a charismatic leader saying, I'm different and change, that certainly brought in the crowd.
The economy of Angola is not very good. People are yearning for a better government. Oil prices have gone a little up now because of the Ukraine war. So can't João capitalize on that?
So you're right. Oil prices are much higher than they were. So hovering around $100 a barrel is significantly more than it was last year. And Angola finally is out of recession. It was coming out of recession even before the Russians invaded Ukraine. And credit to João Lourenço, since he's been in power since 2017, since the last election in Angola, he has done some economic reforms. He has clamped down in some areas of corruption. And he had the misfortune of having COVID and low commodity prices continuing. So he's come out of that. I think that will carry some vote, especially amongst the middle-aged. And I think he will certainly, the MPLA, the party, will gain significant votes, majority of votes in rural areas. The big question is the urban and peri-urban areas, and especially the youth vote. And that's where I think he will struggle, just because of the desire for change, even if he's been doing some good economic policies and got a good economic team, that's not necessarily cutting through with you.
The mere fact that the election is going on peacefully, does that say something for Africa?
Yeah.
Finally, maybe democracy is taking root.
This is a process, and you're absolutely right. I mean, look, the civil war in Angola ended 20 years ago this year. This is the 20th anniversary this year of the end of the civil war when the UNITA leader, their original leader, Jonas Savimbi, was killed in action, and the war ended. Simply, that was it. He died, the war ended. And Angola's been at peace since then and has had several elections. And so this is a highly contested election. You know, it's been conducted peacefully. And I think the big question will be, when the results come in, will they be accepted peacefully? There might be a period of tension with some demonstrations, but I suspect that it will be a peaceful, longer-term outcome. The big question, I think, really is, will the MPLA, the party of government, lose for the first time its absolute majority? I think that's the issue at stake here. The last election, 5 years ago in 2017, they got 61%. But the way things are looking at the moment, it would be very suspicious if they got anything like that this time.
That's Alex Vines, who has led the African program at Chatham House since 2002 and became managing director for Risk, Ethics and Resilience in 2019. He talked to me from Mozambique. As Angola prepares for a general election tomorrow, its citizens abroad will be able to vote for the first time. According to the Associated Press, more than 14 million people have registered to vote in these elections from Angola's population of 33 million. For the first time, Angolans in the diaspora can vote, and 22,560 have registered to vote outside the country. Voters are to be selected, 220 members for the National Assembly, who will then select the next president. The ruling MPLA is seeking to maintain its majority of 150 of those seats. In Sudan, officials today said the death toll from flash floods in Sudan since the start of the country's rainy season has climbed to 83 as downpours continued to inundate villages across the East African nation. Since the start of the rainy season, thousands of Sudanese families have been left homeless, sheltering under tattered dwellings. Safadin Soliman, a resident of the town of Makialab, says the floods overwhelmed his community. Soliman says the floods instantly filled the streets of the neighborhood and then the alleys and came into houses, yards, balconies, kitchens, and storage rooms. The water was heavy and running. Only a few people managed to save their furniture. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, warns the floods bring increased risk of disease such as cholera and malaria. Another Makleb resident, Haidar Abdul Rahman, says with many families without shelter, their concerns about other dangers. Abdul Harman says autumn has just started and people are worried that there will be more rains and there is no place to stay. Not all families have tents and they are worried about the children's safety as they are scorpions and snakes. OCHA says the floods have affected nearly 150,000 people. Authorities have declared a state of emergency in 6 of the country's 18 provinces, with fears the floods will spread to most of the country. UN aid agencies in Sudan suffer from significant funding shortages, and OCHA says it has received less than a third of what is needed for this year. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has set new nomination fees for aspiring candidates who seek to contest future elections. The sharply higher new fees are being met with a mixed reaction. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zenwashi has the details.
Under the new fees, presidential candidates must pay nomination fees of $20,000, up from $1,000. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission says candidates for parliament must pay $1,000, up from $50, and municipal council candidates need to pay $100. In the past, council candidates did not pay a fee. Professor Lovemore Maduku is the president of the National Constitution Assembly, or NCA. He says for a political party, the cost could become insurmountable.
You'll know that there are 1,958 councillors, and then there would be a third of that, up to about 600 councillors who would be added as a result of proportional representation with amendment number 2. Then you have members of parliament that would be up to 270. Then 60 senators, of course there are 80, the other 20 are not elected. A political party that wants to field a presidential candidate and all members of parliament, all senators and all councillors will require something close to $500,000 United States dollars.
He says the NCA considers the new nomination fees unacceptable and unconstitutional. The party thinks ZEC has no power to make such decisions. Vivid Gwede is a political analyst, and he echoes Maduku's sentiments.
The essence of democratic politics is that there must be minimum restrictions for people to participate in elections, either as candidates or as voters. And the gazetteers' fees will really make people unable to participate in elections as candidates because they are high and people will not be able to raise the money. So the process becomes elitist.
Jasper Mangwana is a ZEC commissioner, and he says the new nomination fees are justified.
The gazetting of these figures will also promote good governance and democracy to ensure that people who vie for public office show commitment, they also show seriousness and understand the requirements of these offices. The gazetted figures are not really on the high end. It's just $1,000 for a National Assembly and $20,000 for a presidential candidate. I think these are very, very fair compared to what is happening in other regions.
Zimbabwe's last national elections were in 2018, not long after the military ousted longtime leader Robert Mugabe. Those elections were more peaceful than past polls, and many more candidates were encouraged to run for various leadership posts. The presidential ballot had 23 candidates from prominent contenders such as career politicians and business people who promised to revive the economy, to little-known candidates with bizarre election promises such as bacon, milk and eggs for breakfast for every Zimbabwean. Some politicians welcomed the new fees, citing that they will only bring candidates that are serious about being elected into office. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
The World Food Programme, WFP, reports up to 22 million people in Ethiopia, Kenya and Somalia are facing severe hunger. It says hunger and the death of millions of livestock have forced more than 7 million people to leave their homes in search of food, water and grazing pastures for their cattle. The WFP today warned these figures are likely to grow and conditions will continue to deteriorate as poor rains are forecast for the fifth year in a row. WFP officials say the agency is scaling up to reach 8.5 million people across Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, and that $416 million is needed to provide life-saving aid for the rest of the year. The UN Children's Fund reported today that 10 million children under the age of 5 are acutely malnourished. It adds nearly 1.8 million face severe wasting, which is life-threatening. A high-ranking gang leader in northwest Nigeria has accepted a truce ending years of violence against local communities. Zamfara State Deputy Governor Hassan Nasiha said at a news conference that Bello Turji and allied armed criminals have agreed to stop raiding villages, burning homes, and killing and kidnapping residents. According to the French news agency AFP, no one in his area has been killed in the past 6 weeks. The truce comes 2 months after the creation of a peace committee to negotiate with the gangs. Nasiha said among the conditions requested by the gang was the release of some of its jailed members and an end to extrajudicial killings of members of their ethnic community. AFP notes that many are herders and asked for the return of water holes seized by farming communities. Authorities agreed to the request, and the wire service says Turuji is now fighting other gangs who refused to accept a peace deal. Authorities in Cameroon say thousands of people who fled communal violence near the borders with Chad and Nigeria are suffering from malnutrition, with scores of children dying in the past few weeks. The conflict in December between cattle ranchers and fishers left at least 40 people dead and pushed more than 100,000 into Chad. Many have since returned, but aid groups say the displaced are struggling to survive. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
An aid worker at the Cameroon government hospital in Maroua tells a mother her child is still severely malnourished and his life may be threatened if his mother takes the child out of the hospital. The aid worker's plea was broadcast several times on Monday on local media, including Cameroon public broadcaster CRTV, Cameroon Radio Television. The mother finally agrees to remain in the hospital with her son. Maroua is the capital of Cameroon's far north region that shares borders with Nigeria and Chad. The Cameroon government says thousands of people in the northern border with Chad and Nigeria are suffering from malnutrition, with scores of children dying in the past few weeks. 28-year-old tomato seller Mota Nyako says she is lucky her malnourished son did not die.
Avant d'arriver ici, l'état de mon enfant était grave.
She says she rushed her 2-year-old baby to the hospital because he was vomiting ceaselessly and had severe diarrhea. She says her son has begun gaining weight after receiving treatment at the hospital for a week. Nyako says she is going to inform women whose children are losing weight to immediately bring them to the hospital where their lives will be saved. Nyako, who spoke via a messaging app from Maroua, said she was displaced from a border district with Chad during clashes with farmers and fishermen over water. Nyako said she is poor and cannot afford enough food for herself and her son. Cameroon's Ministry of Public Health says the thousands of new malnourished people reported within the past 2 months adds to the more than 100,000 children in northern Cameroon currently suffering from acute malnutrition. Flaubert Danby is a Cameroon health official in charge of malnutrition in Cameroon's far north region.
La situation semble plus aiguë dans le Logone Chari.
Danbe says malnutrition is severe in Kuseri, Mada, Makari and Gulfe districts on Cameroon's northern border with Chad and Nigeria. He says Mayochanaga administrative unit, which has the highest food production basin on the border with Chad and Nigeria, is also reporting increasing cases of malnutrition because of an influx of displaced persons. Cameroon says tens of thousands of its citizens fled the December 2021 bloody conflict over water between cattle ranchers and fishermen to Mayochanaga. Some of the displaced persons have returned, but their plantations have been severely damaged by battles or by heavy rains and flooding. Dogbe Umaru is an aid worker with the Cameroon Red Cross in Kuseri, a town on the border with Chad. He says many malnourished families do not take their children to the hospitals.
La malnutrition, proprement dit, en notre langue locale.
Umaru says many villagers generally prefer to hide their malnourished children at home. He says communities accuse parents of poorly fed children of witchcraft practices. He says some mothers hide their malnourished children because uneducated community members may punish women, thinking that the women give birth to children they are unable to feed. Umaru said some hospitals are very far and difficult for villagers to access. Cameroon says it has created special centers in many villages for malnourished children to be treated free of charge. In July, Cameroon's government called for emergency food support for more than 2 million people, the government said, are facing hunger along its northern borders with Chad and Nigeria. Authorities blame natural disasters, insecurity, and northern border intercommunal clashes in part for causing the food shortage in the nation of 26.5 million people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Associated Press reports that a new offensive by Islamic rebels in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province has displaced more than 80,000 people. The International Organization for Migration says that brings the total number to nearly 950,000 in the northern region. The Associated Press notes that since June, the extremists have spread south to the districts of Ankouabi, Chuari, and Misufi, where they burned villages and beheaded civilians. Troops from the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, were deployed to the province a year ago with limited success. The government says the attackers are part of a foreign invasion by the head of the independent peace-building organization. Mozambique's Formis says Mozambique says otherwise. Albino for Kwihi told the Associated Press the conflict has domestic origins based on bad governance and the lack of popular support for the state. Before the most recent attacks, a senior national police official said the war against the militants was almost over.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Dan Brown, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.